We are listening to the cycling podcast at the Giro d'Italia in association with Rafa. Today we are in Asiago.
Cozze ci tene, cozze, cozze vicine, non spigudeci ora, non spigudeci ora. Cozze ci tene, cozze, cozze vicine, non spigudeci ora, se non mangiano le femmine.
I try today and go to the breakfast because the finish line is near my country, and I have too much people today for see me in the finish stage. I try.
Today there will be a shark attack on the downhill of Monte Grappa.
Hello, my name is Richard Moore. I'm with Daniel Freeb.
Hello, Richard.
And we were played in there by two friends of the podcast, Joe Dombrowski with his prediction for today's stage, a prediction that didn't really come to pass, and also Filippo Pozzato, whose prediction did come to pass because he said he would be in the break, and he was.
He was pretty quickly out the back. He didn't last at
all. Did he make it within travelling distance of his home?
He did. He made it past his hometown of San Rigo, the peacock, of course. But of course, peacocks don't fly, do they? We know now, we've established on this Giro that you can eat peacocks.
Yeah.
And but the meat is a bit stringy. But yeah. They don't fly at all, do they?
Well, the peloton gobbled him up as he...
You're
as
ignoring he my question. Do they fly at all? They don't fly at all, do
peacocks?
They?
Peacocks?
No.
I was just concentrating on my joke. I don't know. Do they fly, peacocks?
They have wings. Really, they must fly. Oh, this is embarrassing. Let's really move on.
Okay.
We know slightly more about cycling, but only slightly.
We're in quite a rowdy bar. There's a fellow on your left shoulder, Daniel, who's, I think, wants to be part of the podcast, but let's ignore him. The tail of the tapper, stage 20, Pordenone to Asiago, 190 kilometres, final day in the mountains before tomorrow's time trial. So it all came down to this stage, really, in terms of sorting out the favourites for tomorrow. Although I'm not sure that we're all that much the wiser, but we'll get on to that.
Oh, I think we are.
Okay. We're in Hemingway country here. We went over Monte Grappa. Hemingway lived here briefly. I read that in your book, actually, Daniel. And he was a big fan of Grappa. His characters always drank a lot of Grappa, and he wrote exclusively with Monte Grappa pens. There you
really?
Go.
Wow.
Yeah. So the morning started with the news that Steven Kruiswijk, the Dutchman who almost won last year, was out with stomach problems. The break formed pretty early. The big news was that Filippo Pozzato was in it.
Well, actually, what could have been bigger news, in all seriousness, was that Mathieu Ladagnou had made it from FDJ. I imagine that most of the general classification riders had tried to get a guy in the break at some point, because we talked in the last few days about the valley road between Grappa and Asiago, and had someone like Nibali got Tsutsu down the road, or Tsutsu
or,
rides for his team,
or Sheikh Nasser,
yeah, or
who was at the start today,
yeah, or Quintana fired someone like Amador down there, then potentially they could have been helpful later, but it didn't happen.
No. Anyway, six-man break formed. Two of the riders in there, Dylan Teuns and Dries De Venins, were the sort of last survivors of that break and were eventually caught on the Grappa. Katusha ripping it up on Monte Grappa. And we'll hear from Dmitry Konyshev, their Dart Sportif, about their tactic. But they were setting a fearsome pace up there, kind of doing Tom Dumoulin's job for him a little bit, because it was fast but obviously steady. Yates and Mollema were in trouble on there, but they got back. Adam Yates and Bauke Mollema, of course, they got back on. Then Andre Amador took it on the descent for Nairo Quintana. The real action started with about 23 kilometers to go on the final climb, when Vincenzo Nibali launched a TV attack. It was an attack. It was
harsh. You're very
it
harsh.
Was decent. It was decent. Quintana shadowed him once again in this Giro. The motorbikes were very close to the front of the race, and arguably, there was a bit of assistance for Nibali and co as they attacked, which is not a good thing to see. But Dumoulin just kept doing what he does, clawing his way back, came back together again. Then it was Zakarin and Pozzovivo who jumped away, the two sort of dark horses in the top six, but both within shooting distance of the pink jersey, both within a minute and a half of the jersey. So they went away. They were allowed to get away. They held a steady gap for quite
a
while.
They're probably good pals now, aren't they?
15-20
spent a fair amount of time together.
15-20 seconds it was, and you know, Nibali and Quintana were riding hard behind them and couldn't close it. It all sort of came back together again. I'm not as good at this tail of the tapper thing as Lionel. He's very, he really sort of, he's good on the detail.
He's struggling.
I'm a bit vague. I'm a bit vague.
Yeah. Somewhere, somewhere.
I'm not good
today,
at concentrating on the
pots
action.
Pots of even Zachary.
And then Pinot won. No, sorry. on the gap was 13 seconds, I think, as they went over the, no, as it got to
the top of the Forza climb, the last climb in the Giro.
Yeah, they were still ahead at that point,
first
weren't they?
First category climb.
The collaborative tail of the Tapa. They were just ahead at that point, weren't they?
They were.
They were still ahead. Pino, meanwhile, bridged up to who was it again? Nibali and Quintana. He bridged up to them. So Dumoulin still just tapping out his own rhythm. He was by now with Yates and Jungels.
Mollema
as well. So top of the climb, five of the first six were together. The one guy that was missing was Dumoulin. He was about 15 seconds back with those other riders, but he got a bit of help from them, as he said at the finish, on the sort of descent down to the finish. It was weird because the gap between Dumoulin and Co and the other top five, it was about 20 seconds. Then it came right down to 7 seconds, and it looked, Jungels was especially strong. It looked like it was going to come back together. Then it opened out again, and it was
a classic case of how not to ride a team time trial, because we always hear that in team time trials there are some guys who take big pull, the powerful guys, they can absolutely ruin a team's rhythm by taking big pulls on the front, and then there's a moment sort of hesitation when the next rider comes through. Whereas in the front group, everyone was turning very quickly, weren't they? 2, 3, 4 second turns, and they eventually ended up gaining quite a bit of time.
It was a strange situation where they all had something to gain from it, so they were all committed to it.
Well, strange but very common in this Giro, and this is what we've been talking about for a few days now. True. That we knew this would happen. All the talk about Dumoulin having or his team not being particularly strong, we always knew that he would find allies along the road, whether they be guys going for the white jersey, guys going for stage wins, old chums, old teammates, and that's exactly what happened.
Yeah, and at the finish, it was Quintana. We knew that at some point, with the stage went up for grabs, they would start to play around a little bit. There wasn't an awful lot of that, but when they did, it was Quintana who sort of took it on. Pino clearly fancied the stage, on having gone very close in Bergamo, just losing out to Bob Jungels there. He was sort of stalking Quintana. Pots of Evil jumped early. Pino went after him and over the top for a very strong win indeed from Ilan Zakarin and Vincenzo Nibali. 15 seconds later, the Dumoulin group came in. Dumoulin looking very tired, but he seemed to come around fairly quickly, and according to most people at the finish, is the hot favourite for the pink jersey tomorrow. I mean, he's 53 seconds down. He's dropped.
Tell us about the general classification,
Rich. He's fourth overall. We've got Quintana leading by 39 seconds from Nibali, 43 seconds over Pino, and 53 seconds over Dumoulin. I think Zakarin is still a podium contender, but probably not a pink jersey contender. I mean, it's interesting, isn't it? Because a couple of days ago, Dumoulin said that Quintana and Nibali may well lose their podium spots, and that might actually happen. The podium tomorrow could well be Dumoulin, Pino, and Zakarin.
Well, Rich, if you are to extrapolate the results of the first time trial, which was a longer time trial, 39 kilometres on a different kind of course, much hillier, the rider who will win easily would be Tom Dumoulin. And I think, I'm pretty sure that Quintana will finish second. And I'm not really... well, the most important thing is...
Pino.
He had a very poor time trial.
He did, but he's going well, do you
yes,
not think?
Yes, yeah, but I'm extrapolating from the first time trial here. This is a theoretical question. Anyway...
Pino, Pino, the last few days has been outstanding, I think. And there was that stage a couple of days ago where he claimed a minute back, and Quintana said in his press conference that with hindsight that might have been a mistake, which suggests that Pino is somebody he fears. But he said, we're not machines. We're not, you know, we can't do everything. You have to make decisions. And when there are so many riders up there overall, you cannot control all of them. You know, he's had to watch Dumoulin, but he's had to watch all these other guys as well.
Yeah, and Pino's been very impressive. The consistency has been very impressive. We talked earlier in the Giro about how they really brought the heavy artillery to this team, to this Giro. They brought a very strong team, kind of a Tour de France outfit with also the big staff, all their top guys. And, you know, in the past, when things have gone slightly wrong for Thibaut Pino, certainly at the start of his Grand Tour career, he would tend to let his head drop, or things would spiral towards sort of disaster. And that could have happened this week because he was ill much of last week, or slightly ill. I think Steve Morabito, his teammate, told me they had problems with the air conditioning in the hotel and he got a bit of a cold. And what was interesting was that he didn't talk much about that, and he also didn't suffer too much in the race. And this, to his teammates particularly, represented a major step forward. In fact, just listen now to Seb Reichenbach, who's been a key ally for Thibaut Pinot in the mountains, and talking about precisely that. I think Thibaut's more relaxed. He's getting less stressed now before hard stages, and he's also listening to himself less. He knows that his sensations can change from one day to the next. That's also what's allowing him to be more resilient and to finish so strongly. Just a little clip there, Rich, but I thought it was very telling. Something unusual that Reichenbach said, that Pinot has learned to listen to himself less. And we're always hearing that riders should know their own body. And we talked earlier in the year about Dumoulin seeming to be pretty good at listening to his own body and sort of timing his efforts and pacing his efforts. But Pinot is maybe someone who has become anxious when things aren't going perfectly, or he's not feeling brilliantly, and he's sort of put that to one side, or put that to bed a bit on this Giro.
Yeah, on the subject of Pinot falling ill, I wonder if that's because he insists on shaking journalists' hands before he speaks to them. I spoke to a former team doctor last week who told me that the riders are warned that the one foreign body they might come into contact with are journalists, who they reckon were the most likely sources of disease and infection and so on.
And he insists on shaking your hand. I mean, not in huddles at the finish, but generally speaking, when you see him in the morning, always a handshake.
Now, you spoke to his brother as well, Julien Pinot, who's also his coach.
His brother and coach, obviously very proud and happy at the finish line, or at the team bus, sorry, and here's what he said. I think he's taken a step up, but we knew what he was capable of. We haven't discovered anything new at this Giro. Yes, maybe all the background noise and the media coverage got into his head a little, but he was focused on his goal of a podium finish from the start. I thought that was a bit ambitious. I was thinking top five, but he was right in the end. We can say now that we're going for the win tomorrow. Of course, Dumoulin's our bête noire, but the fact remains that Thibaut's riding to win the Giro in a TT. The team's very proud. He's made a big step up, as has the team, because he's always had someone with him, whatever the circumstances. That certainly wasn't the case a few years ago. We've treated this like a Tour de France from the moment last September when we decided we'd do the Giro. We wanted to have the best riders possible here, even if it meant weakening the team considerably in the mountains at the Tour. The whole staff bought into it. For example, we went to do the Tour of the Alps, even though it was pretty complicated for everyone, with the French calendar and other races going on at the same time. But like I said, everyone committed, and that's why we're really proud today. Intrigued to hear there, Rich, that this Giro is something that La France has been planning since last September.
Giro project.
Yeah, and I think it became clear over the winter that he was going to ride the Giro. We didn't know to what extent he was targeting the Giro, but Julien said there that they really got their heads together, Marc Madiot, the team manager, Julien and Thibaut, and they decided that they were gonna go for it after the Tour last year. I mean, I put it to Julien after the interview that it's going to be hard in future now to convince Thibaut not to go for the Giro, because I think he's had the time of his racing life here, and he loves being in Italy, loves racing in Italy, and to now convince him, obviously the French sponsor of that team will want to convince him to focus all of his efforts on the Tour de France, but I think it might be difficult in future.
Hi, I'm Abby and I'm a social media coordinator at RAFA. So I'm fairly new to this role, but it involves customer service queries that come through all of our social channels, and also helping with the content that we put out. Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, good excuse to keep an eye on what's going on for the racing. I've been cycling for around 2 years. I actually got into it through signing up for an Ironman triathlon, and then have kind of gone into cycling more from then. I'm from Cornwall, so I really enjoy cycling back home along the coastline and up onto Dartmoor. It's one of my favourite places to ride. It's nice to go out with a big group of people and then spend the day out riding.
The RAFA Cycling Club is the largest global community of its kind. Members share their passion for the road through rides, events, exclusive club kits and racing. Find out more at rafa.cc.
Yeah.
after 3 weeks racing, after a hard week in the mountains like this, anything can happen tomorrow. And I just, like I said, I just have to focus on my own ride, and then we'll see after the finish. I'm happy that mentally and physically I was in a much better place than yesterday. I'm forever thankful and grateful for the work that Bauke Mollema, Bob Jungels and Adam Yates did for me today.
Thank you very much indeed to Rafa, our sponsor. Very grateful indeed to them. We heard a clip there from Tom Dumoulin's. First of all, the response that he got at the stage start this morning. He was in obviously very good spirits, because before that, and I think this was maybe the crucial factor today, but this morning, the day began for him by being accosted by me in the hotel lobby with a Pedalar de Charme t-shirt, one of our new Rafa design t-shirts, which will be on sale next month.
Well, as I said earlier, Rich, the pink jersey,
it's like a lucky charm.
Well, and the Giro general classification, it was just it's just a bonus after that, isn't it? It's just the icing. It was just a cherry on the icing on the cake.
Yeah, Dumoulin reminded me a bit of you this morning, actually, Daniel, as he came out of the lift with his suitcase, and he was very distracted by it, opened it up, and it was an absolute shambles, and he'd lost something, and he was very anxiously looking for it.
Mark of a genius.
Yeah, is that what it is? Anyway, a little bit before we get on to talking about Tom Dumoulin, who was the resounding winner of our final Pedal de Charme of the Giro, that we might give a little bonus t-shirt to somebody, mightn't we? But thank you very much indeed to Rafa. We are going to be appearing in the Rafa pop-up, the clubhouse in Milan on Sunday. That's tomorrow at 1 p.m. The address is 9 Via Fiori Chiari.
I didn't know we were appearing.
9 Via Fiori Chiari. Well, we're
I think we're just
going.
Shambling along, aren't
yeah,
we?
We're going to appear there at 1 o'clock. And we'll do maybe a bit of podcasting there. We went on Monte Grappa today. One of the new Rafa t-shirts is a Monte Grappa t-shirt. Very nice design, an arrow through Monte Grappa. It commemorates, in particular, the victory... unexpected victory in 1968 by Emilio Casalini when he beat his team leader Eddie Merckx, famously. A story that Daniel knows extremely well. In fact, I found an extract from one of his books, one of his many best-selling award-winning books, about that particular event, the median fans, because that was the first time that Monte Grappa featured in the Giro.
It was absolutely slammed in the press the next day for being a terrible stage.
Yeah, as I read in this book, the median fans expected a clash of the titans and a winner of the caliber of Eddie Merckx or Felice Gimondi. Instead, they saw a freak breakaway win for the journeyman Emilio Casalini, while the warlords of the peloton stood on ceremony. That's a bit harsh, Daniel.
Powerful.
I hope you've not bumped into him.
Anyway, Richard, should we go back to Tom Dumoulin?
Oh, yeah, sorry. It's so compelling. I find myself reading on there, but I'll not quote any more of it. You can buy it. Mountain High, I think, is the book, isn't it?
The song, Tommy Dumoulin. Not very in tune. That's been going around in our heads, hasn't it, for a couple of days now.
More than that. It's been externalised. It's been in the car.
But I was happy for him that he didn't have the kind of day that he probably feared, and he didn't have the sort of day he had yesterday. He was certainly a cut above that, and it became pretty clear. Well, I think when he started to not respond sort of pedal stroke for pedal stroke, but he didn't lose touch when those attacks were going on the top of Monte Grappa, and then at the bottom of the last climb to Forza, it seemed that Dumoulin was going to have a Dumoulin-type day.
I wondered if we'd have a total collapse today, and I wondered that even more after seeing him in his hotel this morning, because he looked tired and he was a bit chaotic and preoccupied and distracted. And it was interesting, Simon Geschke, his teammate, said that his problems the previous day weren't physical but mental, that something just wasn't working for him. And I wondered whether, you know, the memory of the Vuelta in 2015 when he lost the race on the penultimate day would play in his mind, and you know, this would become a mental block for him. That this idea that the second last day of a stage race, he collapses. So I thought he rode exceptionally well today. He obviously was back to the sort of form he was in prior to, you know, the other stages, apart from that one-off day. Doesn't make you wonder, if he hadn't had his toilet break, whether he would actually be, you know, very comfortably in that pink jersey. I think he might have lost a bit of time that day, the Stelvio day, but you know, he'd probably still be in it.
and he magnanimously paid tribute to Malcolm Mullen, Adam Yates, and the other one was Bob Jungels, who, of course, well, they did save his skin, but as we said, that was not some kind of freak, unusual occurrence. All of those riders had reasons to ride. Mollemon may be the least of all of them, although also, you know, Yates was with Jungels. They were both going for the white jersey. So, but this wasn't a sort of suspicious, totally incongruous contribution by a rider who had no reason to help Tom Dumoulin. We've seen that in the Giro before. I remember Wim van Huffel in the 2005 Giro, the penultimate stage to Sestria, helping Paolo Savoldelli. But this,
well, why wouldn't they ride? I mean, there's no reason at all for them not to ride.
Well,
in
should
that
we
situation.
Listen to Mollema? Should we hear what Mollema said about it? Tom says he'll always be grateful for what you did for him today. Was that just a case of an old friend doing him a favour, or were you riding for your own interests?
Oh, well, that's nice. Nice compliment for sure. Yeah, I think it was also my interest. We were hoping to come back for the stage win. You know, the gap was only 10, 15 seconds at that one moment. So, yeah, for sure, I was hoping to come back and not lose any time to Pozzo Vivo. Yeah, I'm still quite far behind in the GC, but yeah, we will see what is possible tomorrow.
So that was Bauke Mollema. Yeah, I was quite surprised that Dumoulin paid such tribute as if they had done him a favour. They had every reason to ride. It would have been very odd had they not ridden. As Matt White and others said, there was a stage win up for grabs as well, and one that might have suited Adam Yates. And let's, in fact, hear from Matt White. Let's hear first from Matt White, and then from Dmitry Konyshev, the sports director at Katusha, because Katusha were very, very aggressive today. Clearly fancied their man Ilnur Zakarin's chances. In fact, Daniel, I almost forgot, but I achieved a career ambition this morning at the start. I got my first ever interview, having been rebuffed many times, with Zakarin himself.
But it hasn't made the editor's cut, has it?
Well, no, I'm going to play it now. Right, okay. I'm going to play it now. Here is Ilnur Zakarin.
Now I feel good, and I try today attack. I will attack, and I don't know, today and tomorrow, very important day, and today the last chance for overall.
You can still win.
You understand?
You can still win this Giro.
Yeah, I want, and I don't know.
Yeah, I think you can. You're very close.
Maybe, yeah.
Good luck.
Thank you.
Okay, that was Ilnur Zakarin. I kind of tricked him into an interview. He didn't appear. He's always said that he doesn't speak English, but he clearly does speak English. And he was, yeah, as I said, he was an outsider for today and took advantage of that outsider status by slipping away. And he's obviously finishing the Giro very strongly. His sports director, Dmitry Konyshev, thinks he can still finish on the podium. Here is Konyshev.
Team rode very hard, very aggressive there. What was the plan? What was the tactic?
Yeah, tactic go block all day today, because if I know this climb is not so stiff, so we try to isolate the other riders, other teams. They normally, if they remain alone, the leaders, it's much easier for us. But unfortunately, our guy who was in the front, flat tire, and then Kizilovsky in the beginning of the climb, flat tire, so it was a little bit unlucky.
The plan, I guess, particularly to get rid of Dumoulin, was it? Because then allow Ilnur to pick the others off.
Yeah, but you know, after 3 weeks of Giro, everybody can drop. So we, Zaka, he's in a good condition. So we try to do a block the first climb to see what's happened there. And yeah, it was almost perfect. But we was trying to do something.
Yeah. He seems to have finished the race very strongly. Is there anything he could have done at any other point in the race, do you think, to be on the podium now? Because he's still, I think, fifth overall.
That for sure, we'll fight for the podium until last meter of the tomorrow time trial. I think it's possible, and really possible.
Who do you think is going to win?
Oh, it's really, really difficult question. I think Dumoulin also can win. Eh? I think 50 seconds from Quintana is not so far.
Coming thick and fast tonight, Daniel, because that was Dmitry Konyshev, and let's go straight to Matt White. Look,
tough Giro. I guess Simon's still, Adam. Jesus. Adam's still in the white jersey, but yeah, it's going to be tough tomorrow, isn't it, with Jungels so close?
Look, it's going to be near on impossible. Yeah, Jungels is a world-class time trial, and he'll be up there with the guys fighting out for the victory tomorrow. So we did all we could. At the end of the day, Jungles was too good on today's climb, and the climb wasn't steep enough for Adam to take advantage of his qualities. And we did all we could. And in the final, we're looking for a stage win there, and the guys have come up a little bit short. But over the 3 weeks, Adam's going to take a lot out of this 3 weeks, the experience. And it'll be a good experience also for him time trialling in the white jersey on the last stage coming into Milan.
Yeah, I guess you look back at the Blockhouse stage and wonder about what might have been.
Well, you can't. As soon as you look backwards, you forget where you're going. So it was bad luck. It's cycling, but you've always got to look forward, and you can't dwell on the past. Otherwise, you waste too much time and too much wasted negative energy, and you've just got to focus on day-to-day what you've got to achieve. And this is going to be a real big advantage for him going into the Vuelta, having another 3 weeks of riding general classification under his belt.
Do you think he'll have learned more than he did even at the Tour last year?
I think so, because it's a very different race, the Giro. And I suppose last year he went into the Tour with no pressure at all, and we were just there to support him, and he pulled an incredible result. But now he came in as one of the GC contenders here, and it's a different type of pressure altogether. And the race physically is also a lot different. So he's going to take a lot from these 3 weeks, and he's a well-earned rest on Monday. And then we reset and prepare for that second half of the season.
Finally, Matt, who's going to win?
Oh, I think Dumoulin's going to win with a quite comfortable margin, actually. It's going to be a great battle for the podium spots, but I think Dumoulin will win tomorrow's TT, and with a 53-second margin, he'll overpass he'll pass over Nairo with ease.
Okay, that was Matt White. I said Simon Yates instead of Adam Yates, but then he said Dumoulin instead of Jungels, or the other way around. So we're all guilty of making mistakes.
Everyone's
sometimes.
Tired, aren't they? We're all tired.
We are listening to the Cycling Podcast at the Giro d'Italia, supported by Science in Sport. Science in Sport, fueled by science.
Thank you very much indeed to Science in Sport for sponsoring the Cycling Podcast. A reminder, you can get 20% off all your Science in Sport products if you enter the code CPOD20 at scienceinsport.com. Also a reminder that they are extremely generous competition closes at midnight, or 1 minute before midnight actually, tomorrow, that's Sunday. So you have until then to enter if you go to scienceandsport.com/thecyclingpodcast. And it is an incredible prize. The first prize is worth £5,000. It includes a limited edition pair of Oakley glasses, the best in-market smart trainer, the Wahoo Kicker, a year's supply of Science and Sport products and Muckoff product, and a signed Team Sky 2017 jersey. There are also second and third places, place prizes worth £1,000 and £500 up for grabs. And you've got until just before midnight tomorrow, Sunday, to enter that competition. Sciencesport.com/thecyclingpodcast. Thanks to them. So, Daniel, Nairo Quintana.
We've talked about cycling the whole time today, haven't we?
Is he a dead man walking?
You're just thinking,
is he a dead man walking?
I think so. It might be a bit of an unusual time trial.
Yeah, I'm not sure.
It might be a bit of an unusual time trial in that it's slightly downhill all the way. We've seen people pull out incredible time trials before to win the Giro. Marco Pantani to beat the mighty Pavel Tonkov in 1998. All sorts of mysterious and some would say unsavoury circumstances surrounding that particular time trial.
Not really?
I'm
reminded a bit of 2008 Tour de France when Carlos Sastre went into the penultimate day wearing the yellow jersey, and it was Cadel Evans was widely fancied to overhaul him and didn't. I mean, you know, we say it time and time again, when you're riding for, you know, your life, for the win. I don't think we'll see the same sort of time gaps as we saw in the previous time trial. It'll be different. And Jonathan Walters made the point on Twitter as well that a time trial at this stage of the race is different. Riders' states of fitness and health and tiredness are all different. They were relatively fresh last time.
And Movistar is a very good time trialing team. They've got a history of signing riders and turning them into better time trialists, whether it's through, you know, coaching or equipment or whatever. Quintana, of course, has ridden well in time trials before. I think he won a time trial in the Tour of the Basque Country a couple of years ago. That's a particularly hilly time trial in the Basque Country. But, you know, we might be surprised. And the same applies to Pino. Don't forget that Pino is the French time trial champion, was very disappointed with his first effort in Montefalco. And Nibali has been up and down. I mean, we talked earlier in the Giro about how Nibali had done very little time trialing this year. I think he's done four time trials now. Only two of them have been on his new time trial bike. So he's the one who, at 39 seconds down, seems to have the least chance of the top four, but I wouldn't rule him out.
Nobody's talking about Nibali, are they, really? It's funny.
Apart from the Italians. Apart
well,
from the Italians.
The Italians certainly
and this sort of sense of disappointment about Quintana persists, even though he's still in the pink jersey. He rode into his press conference again tonight. He rode through.
He was more relaxed tonight in his press conference and smiling and you know, just said he did what he did he did what he could do. And I think he did. I mean, I think we saw him on his limit when he was away with Nibali chasing Zakarin and Pozzovivo. And yeah, it's maybe not the Nibali, it's maybe not the Quintana that we've seen when he's been at his very, very best. I don't think he is at his very best, but he is, as you pointed out earlier to me today, Daniel, he is trying.
Yeah, he is.
I think you spoke to his boss, didn't you?
I did. Eusebio Unzué at the Movistar team bus tonight had this to say about Nairo Quintana's performance.
Bueno, desilusionado sería si no.
We'd be disappointed if we hadn't tried, but we did give it a go. I think the riders have got more and more tired, and it's been hard to open up gaps. The lack of freshness has given us this outcome. Tiny differences between the main contenders and, at least in theory, uncertainty about who's going to win. Dumoulin hasn't been the strongest in the mountains, but he's defended himself very well, and he's also found some help along the way from various teams defending their own interests. We've basically had a time trial from the front and the back, with riders either trying not to lose a few seconds or trying to gain a few. We hoped it wouldn't pan out that way, but it's what we've seen.
So that was Eusebio Unzué.
Not quite admitting defeat, but almost.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, Quintana wasn't quite admitting defeat either, but was not exactly overflowing with optimism and positive thoughts about his chances in the time trial. It's funny, isn't it, Daniel, how often when there's been a time trial on the final day, most famously, obviously, in 1989 Tour de France, but also here at the Giro as well. It's a real gamble to put a time trial on the final day, because if you've got a rider 2, 3, 4, 5 minutes lead, there's a real sense of anticlimax about it. It's a coronation. But often when there has been a time trial on the final day, it has come down to the wire and the race has been potentially decided on that final day.
Yeah, and let's not forget, if any one of those four riders, or even going further back, has a mechanical problem or a crash tomorrow, then that could have a decisive effect on the outcome of the Giro.
I think any of those top four could still win the race, couldn't they? And that is amazing. It's everything that Mauro Vegni must have dreamed about for the 100th Giro. So time trials, perhaps they're not our favourite thing, but it's going to be absolutely full of suspense and very, very exciting.
It was interesting to hear Unzué there liken this Giro to one long time trial where time was being gained in seconds at the front and the back of the race. And you know, we talked in the first week about how you'd need to count the time gaps with the calendar by the end of the race.
Because you said that, Daniel.
I did, because there was so much climbing. But I think it's had the opposite effect. There's been probably too much climbing, or I think there have been too many kilometres in this Giro. I think particularly in this last week, there have been 3 or 4 200-kilometre-plus stages when they could easily have been 120 to 150-kilometre stages. I think we would have seen better racing, more spectacular attacking. Having said that, it's been very close, and it will be a nail-biting finale tomorrow.
Yeah, it's been a real slog, and you can see, I think, the riders are you know, dead. But having said that, and I said this last night, the top 10 is full of riders who all in their own way have really animated the race, to use a word that's controversial in some circles, but they have. They've all had an impact, whether it be winning stages or there have been no Alla Zubeldia performances in the top 10 at all. So from that point of view, it's been hugely entertaining. Before we clock off tonight, Daniel, this morning, before presenting Tom Dumoulin with his Pedaleur de Charme t-shirt, we had a very early start at the Dimension Data Team Hotel, where we met the team principal, Douglas Ryder, and took him for a little spin in our Maserati. Here he is.
The Cycling Podcast on the road at the Giro d'Italia with Maserati.
So, Doug, the one of the last people to sit in that seat was Mark Cavendish.
Oh, wow.
Your rider.
Oh, well, that's nice. Did you have to move the seat forward, or...? Was he a bit shorter?
I don't know what you're saying. Doug, we're almost at the end of the Giro. You've got your stage win. A lot of teams don't have a stage win, are going home empty-handed. That must give you some satisfaction.
No, absolutely. I think, you know, we wanted to come to this tour to win as many stages as we could, and we've never won a stage in the Giro before. So to go away with that stage 11 victory with Omar was just absolutely brilliant. I mean, it was a hard-fought victory, but you're right. I mean, there are not many teams that have won stages, so that's why today, on the final stage of the final opportunity, it'll be, you know, all in, guns blazing, I think, and everybody will be out there to try and make an impact today. So it'll be a super hard stage, but, I mean, you can see just in the last few days, this week is brutal, and it's really hurt a lot of riders, and no one is really, you know, strong enough anymore to really make a massive impact without the support of others. So it'll be an interesting day for sure, and a hard day.
Do you look at some of the teams? I'm thinking in particular of a team like Orica, who have started out life signing fast men, guys who could win races, and they've evolved into a GC team. Yeah. That's the way to really be at these races and be, I suppose, participating fully, to be fighting for the leader's jersey long term. Is that where you want to go with this team?
No, I think absolutely we do. We are in full support of Mark Cavendish at the moment and in this year's Tour de France again, but going forwards for sure. You know, we believe that the endurance gene that is in Africa and in African endurance runners, you know, we want to take an African rider onto the podium in a Grand Tour. That was our kind of our ambition and our dream from the beginning, and I think that still is. And so absolutely do we want to morph into a GC team completely. You know, I don't think to the level of Sky. You know, in terms of Orica, I mean, Orica is an aspirational team, and I think they've done some amazing things, and it's something that we look up to them too. So yes, we definitely want to bring in some guys that can go for sure in the next, you know, 2 years well into the top 10 of a Grand Tour. So that is definitely the focus.
It costs money though, doesn't it? That's where the sport becomes really expensive, when you not just in terms of having the GC rider, but the team around him to support him.
No, absolutely. And I think, of course, you know, the dream guy for us would be Louis Meintjes. You know, he was top 10 last year, was with us for many years before, you know, he went on an excursion. So we're hoping to bring Louis, you know, that would be the dream for us, to bring Louis back and then, you know, to build a team around him. I think that would be just really, you know, first prize for us. Otherwise, you are right. I mean, to bring in somebody from the outside, you know, to do that kind of function and fill that role is expensive and does require a group of people around it. But, you know, in our team with Bernie, with Mark Renshaw, with Mark Cavendish, we are very open and transparent in terms of our conversations and we get their input as well. But definitely as a direction of the team, we need to focus on a GC rider. Absolutely.
We seem to have found our way onto the course here. I've got a pink arrow in front of me. I hope I can find our way back to the hotel.
Yeah, me too, because I have no idea where our hotel is. We went so fast around these corners, I don't know where we are. So this is a nice Maserati. Where'd you get this from?
Do you like it?
That's very, yeah, I mean, it's really nice. I mean, I can start playing with some buttons here. It's quite cool.
Don't do that. I don't know what any of them do. Yeah, we haven't worked that out.
Is there an ejector seat?
It depends. I haven't had to use that yet. Daniel has tempted me on occasion, but, you know, by some miracle, I have a sense that we might be heading back in the direction of your hotel.
Around the block.
The Cycling Podcast on the road at the Giro d'Italia with Maserati. Visit maserati.co.uk to find out more about the new Levante, the Maserati of SUVs. Yours from £56,250 on the road.
So it's Doug Ryder enjoying the Maserati experience. We'll hopefully be back with another in-car interview tomorrow night in our final Giro episode, where we'll be sort of obviously digesting whatever happens tomorrow and hearing from some of the other riders about their sort of Giro moments. Looking forward to that, and we'll be, as I said earlier, in the Rafa pop-up clubhouse at 1 o'clock as well.
And Rich, hopefully we'll be digesting some pretty good food tonight. We're staying in the Franciacorta region, famous wine region of Italy, around not far from Brescia. So, you know, I feel that we've, it was pointed out to us on Twitter today that the food chat, the gastro chat has lapsed slightly in the last few days. It's a shame. It always happens when you come in.
I'm just not
a feeder, aren't you?
As sophisticated.
You're a ritual feeder.
I love food. I enjoy it, but I'm not. I don't have Lionel's.
You love nutrition, I would say.
Depth of knowledge. I love a bit of nutrition. Yeah. I could live off science and sport products. I don't have Lionel's knowledge or real passionate interest in food. Anyway, I do enjoy a nice meal, and I certainly enjoy some nice wine. So let's go and do that this evening, shall we? And we'll be back tomorrow. Thank you very much, Daniel.
Thank you, Richard.
A reminder that you can watch the Giro d'Italia live and exclusive on Eurosport and Eurosport Player. UK viewers can also watch highlights of each stage at 10 p.m. on free-to-air channel Quest. There's a special offer for the Eurosport Player, £29.99 for an all-access pass for the rest of 2017. Details of availability, compatible devices and full terms and conditions can be found on the Eurosport Player website, uk.eurosportplayer.com. You've been listening to the Cycling Podcast in association with RAFA. Thanks to them, and thanks to our other sponsors, Science and Sport and Maserati, and to All Press Espresso for supporting our morning show, Kilometer Zero. The music in this episode is by Amara Terra. Thanks to them. Thanks to those who help keep us on the road, in particular David Luxton, Jonathan Rowe, Nick Christian, and Simon Gill. And thanks to Tom Wally, who produced this episode. Ucciso